Hello, and welcome to day four from the WFH World Congress in Glasgow, Scotland, brought to you here by the Bloodstream Podcast. I am Bloodstream Podcast host, Bloodstream Media founder Patrick James Lynch. Welcome back. I'm expecting that most of you have been here for the previous days. To anyone who's new, jumping in on day four, welcome. Every day after the Congress, I'm recording one of these raw, uncut, unedited recaps or takeaways. I don't even know what you'd call yesterday. It wasn't so much a recap as just a very free-flowing conversation with Lawrence, in which I have to say, in listening to it afterwards, man, did I sound a little bit loopy. You can tell it's getting into day three of the Congress, day four, and the weather continues to be absolutely brilliant, despite everything you are supposed to think about Scotland, according even to the Scots. The weather's been brilliant. The conference has been amazing. Of course, we'll get into that in a moment. But the adjustment, I haven't slept a whole lot since the last time you heard my voice. I've tried to calm down a little bit since the last time you heard my voice. I can't help it. Lawrence is, he gets me energetic. But not sleeping great. And it seems as though my North American counterparts are there with me. So that apparently that's going to be the one little struggly part from the Congress. But you know what? I will take it. There's so many things that I wanted to tell you about today, and I don't even really know how to organize these thoughts, so I'm just going to lean into the raw, uncut version of this and say that at the beginning of today, I expected this was going to be a day, and it was, a lot about gene therapy. Gene therapy was a pretty strong thread through today. Women with bleeding disorders really stuck out as a strong thread through yesterday, gene therapy certainly today. Of course, there's been a fair amount of it throughout the conference. It's a huge part of our lives in this community right now. It was the focus of the opening plenary this morning, which highlighted a bunch of stuff, but I will point out some of the misconceptions around gene therapy. I think sometimes because there's such excitement, we forget that, for example, gene therapy is not a one-size-fits-all term for this kind of science. Gene therapy is really an umbrella for a lot of different quote-unquote types of gene therapy. So the things that these different companies are working on are different, and there were some slides to illustrate that. I think I may have even tweeted a couple of those out with the hashtag. So that's an important point. Right now, if you're a patient listening to this, it's not necessarily terribly relevant that you be paying the closest of attention to the where we are in the trial with what kind of gene therapy, whatnot. But it is something that you're going to have to contend with sooner than not, if not now. Another misconception that gene therapy would cure hemophilia in the bloodline, that is not true. It would only impact the patient, and I should be careful even using the word cure, small c, functional cure you hear sometimes, but gene therapy would ultimately only be an intervention for the individual receiving it, not for their bloodline. So some of the misconceptions were clarified this morning. You can also find some of the tweets. You know, I should mention with regard to gene therapy and the announcements and data presentations from a number of the companies, there's always a lot at World Congress and around ISTH and ASH and some of the other big conferences. HFA actually did a nice job of aggregating everything that had come out from manufacturers, big updates or presentations as of about midday today. I saw them put that out on Facebook and on Twitter. And what I'm going to do is for the comment segment of this podcast in June, so it'll be the third Monday in June, I'm going to dedicate the comment segment to a WFH recap so that there's a little bit of time for things to settle. People can write their reflections and reports. The data that was presented can be published in articles, and there may be some analysis of them. It's kind of hard with so much happening so quickly. It's hard to dive too deep, especially into areas where, for example, gene therapy, I can't speak too specifically about that without stepping way out of my league quickly. So I'm going to wait until there's more information that I can kind of read and digest and present to you in June. But the other reason that I can't really talk too much about the gene therapy component, is I wasn't a part of those sessions today. And in fact, a few of them were specific for the medical community. So there is some separation. I think I've addressed this on here before in the tracks. There are multidisciplinary tracks, but then there are clinician tracks. There are just separations. And there's been a little bit of debate on Twitter about the need for some of that separation. Why can't one of the very active delegates who's traveled across the world to be here, obviously cares about this stuff and is probably quite informed, why can't they attend a medical plenary or a medical session about something if they have the capacity? That was raised earlier, which is a fair point. But I did have the honor this morning of chairing the World Federation of Hemophilia's Humanitarian Aid Program session titled Catalyst Toward Global Change. It featured speakers Elaine Vey, the president of WFH, Dr. Glenn Pierce, board member at WFH, Asad Hafar, the humanitarian aid director of the WFH, John Cox, the CEO of Bioverativ. I think I said it wrong 94 times, by the way, on day one, maybe, or day two. I'm sure some of you caught that. Again, unedited, so I get to this point 6 minutes in. I can't turn around now. That would be terrible. But Bioverativ, now a Sanofi company, their CEO, John Cox, who I'm going to talk about a bit more in a moment, and Guido Ulker. I want to make sure I'm getting his name right. I have it down somewhere, but he is the CEO of Sobi, and as has been mentioned, Sobi and Biogen, now Bioverativ, Sanofi company, are the visionary contributors to the WFH's program. So there was those five presenters, and we showed a shortened version of the video that I directed, believe, produced for the WFH on the availability of corrective and non-emergency surgeries in India as a result of more factor product being made available. You can watch the full version of that at treatmentforall.org. It's up there right now, treatmentforall.org. You also learn more about the WFH's program there. But just a really powerful session, I thought. The presentations were all precise, and it's really conflicting because on one hand, you look at data. So the WFH's humanitarian aid program has been around for a time now, but they had an expansion that was triggered by a huge commitment from Bioverativ and Sobi of ultimately 1 billion units of factor across 10 years. Sometimes you see it broken down as 500 million across 5 years. But as John from Bioverativ restated today, the commitment, the announcement was 1 billion across 10, and they've broken the commitment up a little bit. So that's why you may see the discrepancy sometimes. But that really triggered enormous expansion almost immediately. The humanitarian aid program was able to offer factor to cover the introduction of low-dose prophylaxis to a number of areas around the world. Like I mentioned with India, factor that was available for surgeries, non-emergency and corrective surgeries, when previously the scarce amount of factor that there was reserved only for emergencies. Now we can correct joints. We can do non-emergency surgeries. Identification and outreach efforts, and what's being done to make sure that we're diagnosing more people with hemophilia, because there's some pretty sobering numbers about just how far away we are from diagnosing the number of patients that we actually have. So we saw leapfrog. I want to say, and I'm citing this off the top of my head because I was I wasn't able to screen grab the slides as they were coming up as I was a part of the presentation, but I believe in 2013, the number of children on prophylaxis through humanitarian aid program factor was less than 100 worldwide. I'm fairly certain that that's what I saw. And now, today, it's something in the vicinity of 1,200, 1,300. So you get the point. It's expanded 10, 11, 12 times. And you see those kind of numbers across the board in terms of the amount of surgeries that have been enabled, the amount of new patients diagnosed. We're seeing uptick, 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 uptick. And yet, as I mentioned the other day, and this was used at the very beginning, the president's plenary at the very beginning, Elaine Vey's plenary, where he mentioned how we are not bridging that gap in the way that we wanted to. you know, huge strides have been made. There was a session yesterday, actually, that was reviewing the GAP program. It was actually featured in the Congress Daily this morning, which I'm going to put a link in the program notes. So wherever you're listening, if you look at the notes for this episode, you should see toward the top a hyperlink to the World Congress Daily. I do recommend you take a look at that if you're interested in, you know, a slightly deeper dive into highlights. But why was I just talking about the Congress Daily? Something that was in there, probably. I don't know. It'll come right back to me. But I was mentioning about the slides and the 12, 13 times and how much more is now available. Patrick, where'd you go, buddy? Where'd you go? Bring it on back. I don't know precisely where that train of thought went, but the GAP program. There's a bit in the Congress Daily about the GAP program. A lot of great has been accomplished, but it is clear that there's so much more that needs to be done. And that's a point that I want to actually stick on for just a moment here. That commitment from Biogen originally, now I'm like apprehensive to say Bioverativ because I'm afraid I'm going to mispronounce it again. Bioverativ and Sobi now, 1 billion units across 10 years. Grifols also made an 8-year commitment from 2014 to 2021 for a total of 200 million IUs a factor. They also, the humanitarian aid program benefited from CSL Behring making a 10-year commitment for a total of 22 million IUs and a 3-year agreement, 2017 to 2019, with the Green Cross for 6 million IUs. So Bioverativ and Sobi, 1 billion IUs across 10 years. Grifols, 200 million across 8. 200 across 8. CSL Behring, 22 across 10. The Green Cross, 6 across 3. There's a pretty steep drop-off. And that is also the total list of contributors to the humanitarian aid program's factor donation. So there's a lot of manufacturers in our space whose names you didn't hear me mention. And you heard a few big numbers, and I don't at all want to take anything away from what CSL and the Green Cross have done, because they are amongst 5 who are giving to this program, period, full stop. But obviously, 22 million units across 3 years is a significantly smaller give than 1 billion across 10. And the hope was that when this commitment was made from Bioverativ and Sobi, that other companies would follow suit. And that hasn't quite happened. And I think that that's really frustrating. And, you know, it came up today. Chris Healy made the point from Grifols. He framed their commitment. And I did mention, I want to talk about John and Guido as well, as the CEOs of Bioverativ and Sobi, and talking about why they have championed this program. But Chris made the point that he felt as though it was an ethical imperative. And I thought it would be really interesting to talk to all the decision makers at the highest levels of the various manufacturers of factor in our space, and to ask, do you believe that there is an ethical imperative to help the WFH's mission of making treatment for all a reality by contributing factor to the humanitarian aid program? And if the answer is no, that's striking. And if the answer is yes, well, unless you're one of those 5 companies I just mentioned, how come you're not? Now, I do want to acknowledge that there is the SHARE program through LA Kelly Communications, Lori Kelly's entity, that accepts factor donations. It's a different infrastructure from the humanitarian aid program, but I do know that companies can give that way as well. But nonetheless, we are very far away from where we need to be, and there was some striking data, again, encouraging data, when we look at, we had 100 kids on prophylaxis, now we have 1,200, but then also some sobering data when you look at just how far we are from making that vision of treatment for all a reality when, as it is, what was that number? We have like 130,000 identified patients with hemophilia, who are not receiving adequate care, it's 75%, 70 to 75% of the world is continuing to not receive adequate care. And yet we look at the growth of the last number of years, and I have had a very privileged front row seat to meet the clinicians, the patient organization leaders, the patients, the parents, in some cases, government officials in El Salvador and Indonesia and India and Senegal and Nepal, and have gotten a sense of how collaborative, multidisciplinary, and challenging, just a sense of how challenging all this is. And I guess I never realized, and I'm almost embarrassed to admit this, but I guess I never realized that you can draw the line at five manufacturers, or five organizations that give factor to this vital program that I'm watching change lives dramatically, and making videos about that and spending a lot of time thinking about that and acknowledging that that is important, and that the reason to have an international nonprofit with a mission of treatment for all is and ought to be that you seek treatment for all. And I have trouble reconciling the amount of profit and the amount that we still have to do. I did mention that John's speech in particular, John Cox's speech, was something I wanted to come back to. He spoke extremely passionately about Bioverativ's commitment and his reasoning for it. And he admitted, and I asked him a follow-up about this too, there were a lot of reasons to say no. But after the 2014 call from Mark Skinner for companies to do more, John took that very seriously, who at the time was the head of manufacturing at Biogen, and Glenn Pierce wanted to make something happen. And the folks over at Sobi, as a partner to Biogen, when they were engaged, they wanted to make something happen. And they put together a white paper, and they did it. And John said there were plenty of reasons we could have said no, plenty of reasons along the way to stop it, lots of challenges, lots of issues, but they were all solvable. And they are solvable if you have the right kind of thinking behind why do you want to do this. If you have the right kind of thinking, the problems are solvable. And if you don't, there are reasons not to proceed. So I don't know what I'm doing with this information, but I'm, you know, that was what? It's 8 o'clock now. It's been several hours, and that is still kind of just moving around inside me. I think I'm also just surprised that I was not fully, I've been staring at the names of the visionary contributors, and I've been staring at all this information for a long time, but I have to admit, just wasn't until today that it was like, you can literally draw the line at five. And I'm not trying to shame anybody, but it's a complicated thing, and I'm a human being, and I have met blood brothers and blood sisters whose lives have been changed by what is occurring. And it's just so hard when you're always trying to maintain what you have and grow incrementally. You know, you have these two companies that made a huge commitment. You have Grifols making a huge commitment, and then you have a couple other companies who are giving what they can and involved. You'd love to see that number come up, but I mean, I'd love to see other companies just match the little numbers then. If you can't match the big one, that was the hope. I mean, can you match the little one? All right, so I'm gonna put that topic to bed before I get in trouble. But that was that session. It was an honor to chair it. The best part was when the discussion time / Q&A came, there were no real questions, a couple, but you just had individual after individual from these countries standing up to tell a little of their story and how the humanitarian aid program has benefited them, and to say thank you. From India and Cameroon and Venezuela, I don't know, all over the place. And it was the same kind of story each time, and such gratitude. It's powerful stuff. It's really powerful stuff. But I'm going to put a pin in that, and I'm sure we'll come back to it in June during that comment segment. So just some other things that I observed today, participated in today. I was at a session on forward-thinking patient organizations that was hosted by Brian O'Mahony. great session that had seven different organizations, different parts of the world, developing countries, developed countries, each of which had 8 to 10 minutes to present their forward-thinking ideas and where they came from, how they went about accounting for them, executing them, and determining success, and just great ideas. But the thing that I kind of took out of that session more than any particular idea or project that had taken place was the amount of enthusiasm in that room. And I saw, I think it was Amanda Bach on Twitter, comment about the laughter and just the energy. And it's, you know, we're deep into the conference. These are long days at the 4:30 to 6 o'clock slot. And the vibe was just amazing. And I think that says something about the community, the global community. I was talking with a couple guys afterwards from Bolivia, Nicaragua, Mexico, and we were just referencing like two of our buddies, someone from Switzerland who's just talking to this guy from I forget where, and it's like, this is amazing. Like, this really is amazing. My first Congress in Orlando, I was meeting so many people, but now I've interacted with all the more people online. I've traveled internationally a good bit, and I've met people in person because of the work I've done and Bombardier Blood. More people know who I am, so they just are comfortable to come up to me and introduce themselves, and we kind of get into it real quick. And this global community, this global small town, and especially I was just spending some time after the session. I was hanging out for about an hour with these two guys, one of whom I just met on a WFH trip not too long ago. And like, we're three guys in our 30s with severe hemophilia, different countries, different backgrounds, all trying to make a difference and operating with a certain level of intelligence and institutional knowledge about this community and our history. And I just had a little bit of like a, man, this is just so cool. I guess I'm thankful. Today I'm thankful for being here and for being with other very intelligent, creative people trying to serve our rare disease community under all types of different challenging circumstances. Because, you know, developing world, developed world, one of the fellas who I was talking to, I'm referencing, had made the point that we always talk about factor availability. And Glenn had presented some really interesting information about how, you know, the top 25% of people have, I think it was four or more IUs per capita, whereas there's, on the other end, the bottom 25% on average have like 0.0 something percentage. So again, just a huge disparity, but we're always using IUs as IUs per capita as an indication, I suppose, this person was saying, of where a country or a patient group is at. And that's not really the whole story, because you can live in the US where you have all the availability in the world, I know this intimately from my brother's story, and not have positive outcomes. So it's not just factor availability. And we know that, right? We know that. But it's a great point when you think about global advocacy, and we want to use data, and there's been emphasis, we've talked about it on these reviews, for data-based evidence to be used for advocacy purposes. It's a much more compelling argument. If you have data, tell your story, yes, get that emotional hook, but then data is going to be the thing to really seal long-term difference once you have them on the hook with your story. So I thought that was a great point that brought up, and I love being around smart people. And I'm a member of this community, all right? I mentioned Nicaragua. So I saw a fellow, actually one of the presenters in the session from this afternoon. He mentioned to me afterwards, he didn't speak much English. I speak zero Spanish, so we had someone help us. And he was telling me how big a fan he is of Stop the Bleeding in Spanish, and just telling me about also people that watch it in Nicaragua. And then, and this, I admit, brought some tears to the back of my eyes, he told me, again through this translator, that they've used the Stop the Bleeding in Spanish episode, some of them, to train, I believe it was two nurses at their center. And, like, amazing. Wonderful. I didn't think a Nicaraguan guy was going to use a couple of the Stop the Bleeding videos we made to help nurses on board, and now that's happened. That's a thing that has happened with a thing that we made, which is just incredible, and led to a very interesting conversation, actually, about collaborating on future video initiatives, but I won't get into all that. A couple other pieces. What didn't I get to here? I mentioned that already. I mentioned that no one from North America has adjusted. I mentioned it. Oh yeah, VWD. I want to acknowledge, you know, because Lawrence was here yesterday, we didn't spend a whole lot of time on von Willebrand disease or other factor deficiencies. I'm not the best person to ask, but from what I can tell, the offering for people with VWD and for women with bleeding disorders, these are two separate populations, but there's a large concentric circle overlap. There seems to be a good deal of accountability for these populations. I have not been terribly active in. I did attend some of the women with bleeding disorder sessions yesterday, which were interesting to me. I just appreciate listening in those rooms and trying to absorb new information and just learn new nuances that I would never think about. Not having VWD, not being a woman. But yeah, so anyway, it does seem as though that the WFH has done a nice job there. I just can't speak too specifically about it. And then today as well, there were some sessions pricing and economics. And it makes sense, actually, if you think about gene therapies and these novel therapies in general, like Hemlibra and Fitusiran that Alnylam's working on, if we broaden to novel therapies. Pricing is also, you kind of can't have too in-depth a conversation about what gene therapy or, you know, let's go right now, what Hemlibra can do without also just wrestling with the pricing component. And poster abstracts. So there are all these, there's so much going on. There's such great research that's happening in posters and that are presented in the exhibition halls. And I haven't participated in any of the poster abstract presentations. I know those are also available online. That's stuff that come June when all the dust settles and the online resources and the videos, when the digital life of the conference is online, I will pull it together for the Bloodstream audience for June. That is my commitment. And what else? A shout out to the nurses who have kept essentially the treatment center here of the conference going. There is an infusion room, and keep in mind there are people from countries where factor is very scarce. And when they are here, and I don't know how this all, I don't know the process to this, but these individuals have the opportunity to be infused, which is incredible, or to infuse themselves, but they have access to factor. And these conferences, you know, you're on your feet a lot, and you're moving a lot. They're tough for fully able-bodied people, never mind people that have any kind of joint deformities or compromise to their body. And I think that's about it. That's kind of my big takeaways, I guess, I was touched by the humanitarian aid session. I'm feeling grateful and really well connected to this awesome global community that I am very proud to be a part of. I am so proud of the work that people around the world are doing with limited resources, limited time, tough travel and spread out communities and rural areas and bad roads. Like, it's just everything in some areas, just everything working against. And yet you have incredible people fighting and making sure that patients are getting the care and treatment that they need. So I guess in closing, if you are not, I know I talk about it a lot, but I guess we got to keep talking about it. If you are not terribly familiar with what bleeding disorders look like in the developing world or with WFH's humanitarian aid program, go to treatmentforall.org, and the first video that is going to load when you load that page is the video that I directed, believe produced in India, about these corrective surgeries. And we focus on three patient stories. You meet a bunch of clinicians. It's, I think, 8 minutes long. It moves well. We got some nice music. I think it's good. I'm biased. But take a look at it and just be aware. And if you like the video, maybe share it with somebody. Maybe share it with an outlet that might, I don't know, share it somewhere with someone, because there's still so much work to do. Tomorrow's day 5. So I don't know. There's an evening event. There's a gap in the afternoon. I'm not exactly sure when I'm going to record this. I will do it before I go to bed tomorrow. If I go to bed tomorrow, we'll see. But I will get this out. I hope you've enjoyed this. Feel free to give me feedback. And I look forward to bringing you day five, the final day of the WFH's World Congress, tomorrow. Until then.